Hey everyone, Sam Payne here, and before we start the show, we wanted to tell you about a new holiday series from the producers of The Appleseed called the Christmas Jars Podcast. It's hosted by the New York Times bestselling author Jason Wright. Now here at The Appleseed, we love all kinds of stories, and these stories are about people with real needs who experienced real miracles through small acts of service. And you'll meet one of these folks in every episode of the Christmas Jars Podcast. Here's a little trailer.
It's Christmas Eve, and somebody had wedged a gift in my screen door. So I'm like, what on earth is this?
I'm author Jason Wright, and almost 20 years ago, I wrote a little novel called Christmas Jars. In the years since, people from all over the country have shared incredible stories of giving and receiving little jars full of spare change in real life.
One of the greatest blessings I do believe I've ever seen.
Join me for a special podcast miniseries where I'll speak with real people.
They wanted to help, and this is how they chose to help our family.
Who had real needs.
She goes, you're going to be paralyzed the rest of your life.
Who experienced real miracles through these small acts of giving.
It was the exact amount that they needed for their car to get fixed.
Subscribe to the Christmas Jars Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It just literally changed my life.
A full series is available now wherever you're listening to this podcast. Just search for the Christmas Jars Podcast. Now, on with the show. Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. Today, we're bringing you Tall Tales, and the taller, the better. Tall tales, of course, are stories with exaggerated and unbelievable elements, told usually straight, as if they're just true stories. And while all cultures tell exaggerated stories, the tall tale is considered an important part of the American tradition of folk stories, rising from the bragging contests that were part of the American frontier experience. South Carolina teller Tim Lowry brings us just that flavor of story in this piece. He calls it Courthouse Tall Tales. It was recorded live in the Appleseed studio before our terrific studio audience. Here's Tim.
Those old fellas that used to tell Jack stories, they always sat on the front steps of the courthouse. I used to say, there are two trials for any criminal in this county. One takes place in the courtroom, and then the trial of public opinion takes place out there on the front steps with all the old retired coal miners who will pass judgment on everything coming and going. And they would whittle on sticks. What you wanted was a real fine piece of cedar. The prize was a stick of cedar that had no white stripes in it. If you could get a solid red piece of cedar. And they never carved anything. They'd just whittle the stick down into nothing. And there would just be cedar shavings all over the courthouse steps all the time. So the courthouse always smelled really good, you know, because of all those cedar shavings on the courthouse steps. And eventually, after they had held court out there on the steps, they'd start swapping stories. And they'd say things like, there's this feller one time, had him a mule, real good work animal. You know, it had good, strong hindquarters. That's where all the power is in a mule, in its hindquarters. And he's old stingy gut, and he wanted to get ahead of everybody else and make his fortune, so he never would go to church of a Sunday. He'd skip all the church services, and he'd stay home and work with that mule while everybody else was taking a day of rest. Well, one Sunday morning, he had had a cup of coffee, and he looked at his little boy, and he said, go down there to the barn and get that mule hitched up to the plow. We're going to plow some this morning. That little boy left his heathen of a daddy, and he went down there, and he started to get the harness and put it on that mule's back, and that mule turned around right there in the barn. That mule spoke to that boy, and it said, I don't work on Sunday. And that boy dropped that harness and run back up to the house, and he said, Daddy, that mule spoke to me, and he said he don't work on Sunday. And his daddy thumped his coffee cup down on the table and he said, "You just trying to get out of working. Now, don't you be telling lies like that. You just get right back down there and hitch up that mule." So that boy went down there and he picked up the harness. He started to throw it on that mule's back. And that mule turned around again and said, "I told you once, and I ain't going to repeat it again, I don't work on Sunday." Well, that boy dropped that harness and run back up there. He said, "Daddy, I swear on a stack of Bibles, that mule says he don't work on Sunday. He talked to me." And that old feller, he said, "There ain't no such a thing as a talking mule." And he went down there to the barn, and he grabbed that harness, and he picked it up, and that mule turned around, and he said, "I done told you, boy, twice, and now I'm going to tell you, I don't work on Sunday." Woo, that farmer dropped that harness and he took off running like a wild man. He ran about halfway across the county, a hollering, yelling. Well, he had a little old farm dog, this little old short-legged thing, and this ran along behind him going, lickety-dick, 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 lickety-dick. And finally, that fella had run himself out of breath and he stopped and he's going, and there's nobody else really to talk to. And he just kind of absentmindedly looked down at that little old faithful dog and he said, "I never heard a talking mule." And that little dog looked up and said, "Me neither." And that feller is a running yet. And they'd all laugh and shave a little bit of while on their whittling sticks. And then somebody else would say, "Yeah, that old talking mule and that talking dog, that's like Oscar the singing catfish." Everybody knew the story, but you'd say, "Oscar the singing catfish," because you wanted to give that old feller an opportunity to tell it again, you know. And he'd say, "Well," he said, "you know, I like to fish," and he said, "I like to get them green worms you find in the manure, you know, because the catfish, that's what they really like, are them ugly green worms." And he said, "I had me a good can of them ugly green worms," and he said, "I went down the river and got one on my hook, and I throwed it out there," and he said, "A big old catfish, wham, hit that thing." He said, "I hauled that sucker up," and he said, "I was about to get my knife and skin that fish out right there on the riverbank." He said, "And all of a sudden, that fish spoke to me and said, I said, "Ooh, a talking catfish." I said, "Well, of course I won't eat you." He said, "But I couldn't let him go." He said, "So I brought him home. I needed me sort of a fish tank or something, so I throwed him in the horse trough. And he'd swim around in there, and every day I'd go and dig up a big old can of green manure worms and feed that fish. Well, I got tired of feeding the worms to it, because it's a lot of labor, you know, out and dig them worms and such. So I started feeding him chicken liver, because that's the other thing catfish really like. They love the chicken. They don't like the gizzards so much, but they really like the liver. So I'd come out of the house with some chicken liver, and that old fish, he'd stick his head up out of the water and see me coming, and he'd yell, "Bring liver!" And he got to where he stuck his head up. I named him Oscar. That's what I named that catfish. And he got to where he stuck his head up out of the water so much that he could just breathe regular air. He didn't need to stay down in that horse trough. And then I had me a good friend. He'd flop out of that horse trough and walk around the farm with me. Well, as best as Oscar the catfish could walk. You know, he'd go along behind me kind of like a big old wet pancake. Ka-flip, ka-flop, ka-flip, ka-flop, ka-flip, ka-flop, like that. And pretty soon I taught him to sing. And, you know, being a fish, he liked to sing songs about water. So that worked out really good, you know. I'd take him to church, and he'd sing for the baptisms. He'd sing, and people would say, "Oh, it's a miracle, a singing catfish." It's wonderful. Well, they had a singing contest at the county fair, and I took Oscar and entered him. I propped him up against the soapbox and put him right up there to the microphone, and he started to sing. We won the prize. It was wonderful. And then we headed home. Old Oscar come along behind me. Ka-flip, ka-flop, ka-flip, ka-flop, ka-flip, ka-flop. And we come over a humpback bridge. You might have heard a story once about a bear that was denned up under a humpback bridge. It's that same bridge over that, yo. We got to the top of that bridge, and there was a nail sticking up out of a board, and Oscar tripped over that nail and fell in the water and drowned. That's true. I'm serious. Yeah, that's really true. Well, I moved from Kentucky to South Carolina, and I wasn't sure. I thought, do people tell stories like this in South Carolina? They do. Long time ago in South Carolina, when the colony was founded in 1670, there was no church. There were several taverns. So eventually, the Church of England decided we better send a man of the cloth to preach to those colonists over there. So 10 years later, in 1680, the Church of England chartered a church and sent a rector. We should have left well enough alone. He was the bottom of the seminary barrel. The preacher was a sot. There was never enough communion wine because he was always nipping on it. He took a bear cub that he kept as a pet into the church one night, got completely inebriated, took a bear cub into the church and gave it a full baptismal ceremony. Now that was the last straw. A drunken preacher was one thing, a Christian bear was quite another. So they fired the preacher, ostracized him from polite society, and he had to go live out in the swamp on the edge of town. Well, years later, he had birdshot in a gun, and he was stalking a covey of quail, and ooh, he spooked up a bear. Well, he took off running like Yankee Doodle across that swamp and tripped over a log and fell down in the mud, and he scrambled to his knees and prayed the most fervent prayer of his career. He said, "Oh, Lord, please, please let this be my Christian bear I baptized years ago." Sure enough, it was the very same creature. Bear stopped dead in its tracks, got down on its knees, raised its hands to heaven, and said, "God is great, God is good, let us thank him for our food. Thank you, Lord, for honey sweet, and thank you, Lord, for the preacher meat." And that was the end of that.
It's fun to hear Tim Lowry's Courthouse Tall Tales. You know, there are some famous tall tales that have a special place in American folklore. Stories of Mike Fink, King of the Keelboaters, or the giant lumberjack Paul Bunyan and his enormous blue ox, Babe. Or John Henry, who beat the steam drill through the mountain and died with a hammer in his hands. Some of these stories have roots in the lives of real people, but the stories outgrow real events and become outsized statements about who we are and what we're thinking about as a storytelling people. And this story made me think, actually, of my sister, who for a number of years has worked in the public school system in the UK, in England. And her job is to work with primary school kids with special needs. And this year, all her energies have been dedicated to one special kid. And his student has a lot of trouble regulating reactions and behaviors in ways that are neurotypical. But what the student is terrific at is role-playing improvised stories. And my sister's good at it, too. And they have a ball. I mean, sometimes the stories are stories of cops and robbers. Sometimes they're stories of pets at fancy restaurants. Sometimes they're stories of car races, stories of adventures at school, even. And no matter how tall the tales that my sister and her student act out together, they're important clues as to how the student feels, what the student thinks. And not only that, but in the stories, the student doesn't have any trouble at all regulating actions and behaviors. The student can slow down the action or speed it up or find creative ways to solve problems or take on responsibility or deal with anxieties or even let my sister know it's time for a snack. It's a lot easier in the acted out stories than in real life for this student. But in the acted out stories, the performed tall tales, if you will, lie the keys sometimes to working things out in real life. That's the special power that stories have. And it's a power that's not diminished when the stories are more outlandish. I'm thinking of my sister and her student now as I'm hearing some of the tall tales we're bringing you today. And that's where Tim's story took me. Where did the story take you? And who will you take along?
Lively conversation is guaranteed when we listen to stories on the apple seed.
Hi, Sam here. I just want to tell you about another podcast from BYU Radio. It's one you should really check out. It's called Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. And you can listen to it or watch it. It's an audio and video podcast. Now, on Uncomfy, you'll hear stories of real people in moments that challenge their perspective. And instead of getting angry or shutting down or backing off, they stuck with the discomfort. And sometimes that's getting tough feedback from a close friend. Sometimes that's hearing out a colleague from another side of the aisle politically, but in every case, they chose to stay open and curious in those tough moments, and they're glad they did. New episodes of Uncomfy drop every Wednesday. You can listen or watch on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Uncomfy, sticking with moments that challenge us. Check it out.
I want to introduce you to another show from the BYU Radio family of podcasts. It's called The Lisa Show, and it's hosted by comedian, believer, actress, single mother, Lisa Valentine Clark. The Lisa Show delves into the multitude of challenges and relationships that shape our lives, whether it's parenting, mental health questions, social issues. She and her council of moms will tackle it. She'll help you figure out this thing called life. With a lot of laughs along the way, Lisa is a great person to hang around with. The Lisa Show. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of places to listen to The Lisa Show whenever you like. The Lisa Show from BYU Radio.
Simultaneously laughing, we're all agreed that we love, love, love the apple seed.
Thanks for joining us on the apple seed today, where we're swapping some tall tales. One fun thing about a tall tale is that in the beginning, we're never quite sure that it's not just a regular true story. Simon Brooks brings us a story that keeps us guessing all the way along. We'll let you decide for yourself if Simon's story could really have happened or not. But here he is with a story he calls Frog and Snake.
As it's been mentioned before, I'm English. You've probably figured that out. And my wife is American. And we met in the UK, and she convinced me to come over here. And at some point, she said she came from a large family. Now, as a British person, a large family to me would be two or three children, right? And I came over here, and I met her family, and she's one of seven, right? You know, it's a typical guy not paying attention to details, right? And this, the Becky, my wife's sister, is the oldest, and my wife is the youngest. And I have five brothers-in-law. When I first met them, the oldest one, who is quite broad and very tall, he said, "Let's go fishing." And I said, "Okay, okay. I want to know about you." I said, that sounds great. I was like, do you really want to go fishing? Or, you know, we could go and like find somewhere really cool and we could do some sketches or write some poetry. He's like, "We're going fishing." Now, my experience with fishing is not a very good one. You see, I grew up in a town called Worcester, and the River Severn cuts right the way through the middle of Worcester, and there are a lot of canals. It was a very industrial town in the Victorian ages, and a lot of my friends at elementary school and at high school fished. And my brother and I, my brother's 2 years younger than me, my brother and I succumbed to peer pressure. And so we went out to the local shop and we bought a fishing rod and some bait and some tackle and floats and all this kind of stuff. Now, in those days, it wasn't like you go to Kmart and you buy a SpongeBob SquarePants fishing rod, right? They didn't invent those until, you know, plastic came along, and plastic had barely been invented when I was a kid. And so, you know, it was a real fishing rod. And so my brother and I, we took this big pot of bait down to the River Severn, and we were told how to get the weights on and the floats on. There was already, the guy tied a hook because he was looking at us thinking, they're never going to do a good enough knot on that. And so he was very nice about that. And we went to the River Severn and we opened up the can of maggots, because that's what you, when you go fishing in the UK, you get a can of maggots. It's like a Folgers tin with the foil on the top with the holes and everything. And you peel it open and you hear this like of all the maggots like squirming around, and the smell is quite delightful, I have to say. So my brother and I, we're popping these like little maggots on the fishing rods and we're casting it out. And we watched enough TV to know how to like cast, and we figured it out between us. And I'm a bit of a fidget. Those of you that have seen me before, you might know that. And I'm like just sitting there getting bored, more bored, and my brother's like, "Give me the rod," and I give him the rod, and he's fishing for a while, and I'm just like, "This is so boring, I can't stand this," and so I give me the rod back. So I took the rod, and I'm fishing. All of a sudden, the float goes down, and like, I got one, and I start reeling in the line. Now, I've since learned that you don't just reel in the line; you pull, and then you reel, and you pull, and then you reel. I wasn't doing that. I was just reeling whatever it was that was on the end of the line in, and I caught something. There was a fish. It was about this long. It was about 3 inches long, and it was silver, but the hook was right in the middle of the fish. So whatever got the bait had got away, and I caught something as I was reeling the line in. And then I thought, this is okay, because now I'm going to catch an even bigger fish. So I threw the line out with this 3-inch silver fish back into the River Severn, and I'm waiting, I'm waiting, I'm waiting, I'm waiting. I'm getting more and more bored. So I give my brother the rods, and then I'm just like losing it with boredom. So I snatch it back, and the float goes down again. And I do the same thing, reeling and reeling and reeling and reeling and reeling and reeling it in. And I caught another fish, and it was about 3¼ inches long, and it was silver, and it wasn't the same fish because the hook was in a different place. But at that particular point, I knew that fishing wasn't my thing. And so when Uncle Andy, he's called Uncle Andy now, he's my kid's uncle, when Andy said, let's go fishing, that's all that was going through my mind. I was thinking, no. So he pulls his Ford Bronco around, right? And I climb up into it using the rope ladder that he threw out from the side. And I climbed into this Bronco, and we took off, and the air conditioning was great. It came straight through the floorboards of the car, right? And we're driving down these roads, and there are fewer and fewer houses, and the roads become less and less paved, and we're going further and further out. And we're in this is central New York where we're in. We're going further and further out, and I'm like thinking, if I need to scream for help, no one's around to hear me. And I'm getting a little bit anxious, and we eventually pull up this little dirt track, and there's this little pathway that goes into these woods, and he leads me into these woods, and he's got a couple of rods and a bag over his shoulder, and we find this stream. Now, in England, we call it a river because it was about 4 feet across, right? Maybe 5 feet across. And we walk up the upstream a little bit, and he hands me his fishing rod, which is a really nice fishing rod. I don't fish, but I know quality when someone hands me quality. And he had his grandfather's fishing rod. And he handed me this little container. He said, here are your night crawlers. And I was like, night crawlers? Night crawlers? Now, when Sarah and I first came to, my wife is American, like I said, but we drove across country. And as we're driving across country to the West Coast, we kept seeing these signs for night crawlers. I'm like, what are night crawlers? Are they like lizard-like creatures with sharp fingernails and teeth and red eyes? And I was like, what are these creatures? They sound fascinating to me. Sarah doesn't fish. She didn't know. So when Andy handed me these night crawlers, I was really excited to see what they were. And I popped the lid open, and what was in there? Worms. I was like, these aren't night crawlers. These are worms. And Andy looks at me, no, they're worms. I was like, they're night crawlers. I was like, but night crawlers, they have sharp, pointy teeth. And I realized what I was doing. And I said, and I thought they were different to these. And he said, no, night crawlers are worms. And I said, well, why do they call them night crawlers? It's such a cool word. Because they crawl around at night. And I was like, well, that makes perfect sense. And so he made his way further upstream, and I'm left there with his really nice fishing rod and these night crawlers. And so I pick out one of these. And since then, I've become a vegetarian. I've been a vegetarian since I was about 19. And I pick up one of these worms, and I feel really bad about it. And I'm like, it's okay, wormy. The worm's like, no, it's not. And put it on the hook. It's like, ah! And it's wiggling around. It's like, perfect. So then I take the rod, and it's like, one, two, and I go to throw it, and it's caught on something, and what is that? And I turn around, and the hook's caught into a bush. And I'm like, oh, well, never mind. And I untangle it, and the worm is not looking so good, but it's still wiggling more than ever, apparently. And so I second try, and I'm like, here we go. One, two, stuck again. I'm like, what is... And I turn around, and it's in the same bush. And I see Andy looking down at me, and he's just shaking his head going, And I'm waving, hi, Andy. So I untangle the hook again. Like, this worm's gone. So I throw it into the stream, thinking it'll like encourage fish to come along. And I pick up another worm, and it's going, no, I saw what you did to the other one. Don't pick me. And I'm like, I'm really sorry, worm. No, please. And so like the third time, I'm like, here we go. And I'm just holding the rod out parallel to the stream, and I'm swinging the one, two, wee, plosh, yes. And there's Andy looking at me. And I'm like, hey, Andy. And I'm waiting and I'm waiting and I'm waiting. I'm getting really bored because, you know, I'm attention span of a flea. And there's this rock in the middle of this river. And I get distracted very easily. I'm looking at the strata of the rock and the different colours of the rock. And I'm looking at the mosses and the lichen, thinking, this will make such a cool photo. And I'm thinking, what, or even a sketch or a watercolour. And then as I look, there's a toad sitting on this rock. This toad was about 2.5 feet long. Right. And I'm also thinking, we're in New York. Is there a power station somewhere that's leaking something, right? And I'm like, Andy, I'll call up to Andy. Andy, there's, you know, I'm pointing at the rock and he can't see it because it blends in so well. It took me a while to see it myself. I'm like, there's this toad. He's like, I can't see anything. Then he pointed at the river in front of him and he's like, look at that. And I'm like, I can't see anything. And so he's pointing. He leaves his rod up there and he's walking down the river and he's pointing at whatever it is. And then I see it's a water snake. Now, I've seen many water snakes since I've come to this country and I know that they can grow to be quite long. But this one was close to 10 feet long. And I was a little bit astounded by this. And it's swimming down and Andy's like, look at that snake. And I'm like, look at this toad. And then he sees it. And he's like, no, that's amazing. I was like, that's creepy. And then the snake started to weave itself in the water. So it stayed stationary. I mean, the snake was moving, but it wasn't moving down current. It was holding itself in place right in front of the rock. I look at the snake. I look at the toad and I think, no. And Andy goes, yes. And then before I can say anything, the snake straightens itself out and leaps up onto the rock a little bit, grabs hold of the frog toad thing's back leg and starts to eat it. It must have been a French Canadian snake. I don't know. It's like in frog's legs or whatever. And it starts to eat the back end of this toad. I'm like, that's insane. And then I see the snake's body wrap itself around the rock. And I see the tail poking up, pretty close to where the frog's face is. And the frog's tongue goes flying out, grabs hold of the snake's tail, and in it goes, into its mouth. I know way. And Andy's like, yes way. I can't believe this. The frog's eating the snake and the snake's eating the frog at the same time. And we're watching them as they're like chomping on each other and the snake's getting shorter and shorter and there's less and less of the toad, you know, because the snake's starting at the back end and working its way up. And then Andy, he reaches into his wallet, something you should never ever do. He pulls out a $5 bill, stuck it down on a rock and said, $5 on the snake. And I'm like, all right, so I brush off my wallet and blow the dust and cobwebs off it, and I put a $5 bill down on his and put a stone on top of it and said, $5 on the toad. Now, there's just like the neck and the heads of the creatures left, and they're right on the top of this rock. All of a sudden, their mouths open up and poof, they vanish. And they do, they vanished. And Andy said, the toad ate that. And I was like, no, the toad didn't eat the snake. And the snake didn't eat the toad because they're both gone. They ate each other up at exactly the same time. And we looked at our $5 bills. And Andy took my $5 bill and I took his and we called it quits. But I swear, it was one of the one times I did not have a camera with me and I was so enthralled in the moment that I never got to take a picture. And when I tell this story, some people don't believe me. I don't know why. But if you ever meet my brother-in-law, Andy, ask him. He'll tell you it's true.
Simon Brooks with his story, Frog and Snake. Is there someone in your family who likes to tell tall tales? Have you ever exaggerated a story for comic effect or to get out of trouble? What do you think the stories you tell say about you, even when they're outlandish tales? We want to thank Tim Lowry and Simon Brooks for sharing their tall tales with us. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to stretch some of your own. The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, Brian Tanner, and Kira Van Dam. Our audio engineer is DJ Cromarty, and the rest of the Appleseed team is Tristan Schetzel, Kay Hendricks, and Nico Wetzel. And if you like today's podcast, subscribe, rate us, leave us a review, and tell your friends. That's how the podcast grows. We also love to receive emails. Email us at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, @byu.edu. Your thoughts and comments help us shape the future of the Appleseed. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcast, Kaboom,
where you'll hear original audio adventures for the whole family. You can find any episode of The Appleseed or Kaboom on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, on the BYU Radio app, or at byuradio.org. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed.